Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer host, here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Now let's go ahead and jump right into it with this first top story. The U.S. Navy has battled operational tempo ordeals for years. The Iran war exposed the flaws. Vague operational planning and a lack of transparency during U.S. actions in Iran has exacerbated the U.S. Navy's long-standing logistics, maintenance, and manpower issues. And sailors are feeling the effects. Congressional leaders, retired military officials, and deployed sailors have told Military Times. Following revelations from families about some U.S. service members aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln struggling with mental health after 250 days without a port visit, sailors, retirees, and lawmakers told Military Times that troops were absorbing consequences of long-time flaws within the sea service that have been worsened by the current conflict. The Navy has struggled for years to meet high operational tempo demands, they said. Deployments are regularly extended, scheduled maintenance is missed, and the shipbuilding pace remains glacial, leading to delays in delivery and an undersized fleet. These issues have spanned multiple presidential administrations, but have been compounded by the handling of the Iran war and ensuing military operations, sources said, leading to dire circumstances for some sailors. Leaders have disputed the descriptions of deteriorating conditions aboard the Lincoln and denied reporting about quality of life concerns. Asked recently by reporters about families' concerns over the length of the deployment, President Donald Trump dismissed the question, saying that, quote, "it's not nearly long enough." Asked about those same concerns, Admiral Darrell Caudle, the service's chief of naval operations, told Military Times, quote, "Sailors first is not a slogan, it's a war-fighting imperative." Caudle continued, "The sustained pace of operations in the Middle East has only reinforced that taking care of our sailors and maintaining combat readiness are inseparable. We need more ships." Following outcry about conditions aboard the Lincoln, the Navy moved the Nimitz-class carrier USS George Washington from the Indo-Pacific to the Middle East, where it arrived Wednesday. The ship is reportedly replacing the Lincoln, which will now steam toward its home port of San Diego. The move temporarily leaves the Western Pacific without a U.S. aircraft carrier, the presence of which is a key part of the U.S. military's effort to deter China in the South China Sea and reassure regional allies. Operational tempo concerns, meanwhile, are nothing new for the service, according to retired Vice Admiral Fozzie Miller, who served as commander of the U.S. 5th Fleet and U.S. Central Command from 2012 to 2015. Miller joined the Navy in 1979. From his early days in uniform, the service's goal, he said, was to operate at a level that was neither too harsh for the individual sailor nor too unbearable for the equipment vital to mission success. An adequate number of warships was integral to maintaining that balance. "We could use more carriers or less operational tempo," Miller said. "It's one or the other, but we're a global Navy with global responsibilities, and so if we're going to fulfill those, we need more ships." Rear Admiral Thomas Moore, who led the Navy's acquisition program and went on to become commander of the Naval Sea Systems Command, told Congress in 2013 that the service is a, quote, "an 11-carrier Navy in a 15-carrier world." "The demand is unlikely to dwindle," he said. 13 years since Moore's statement, the Navy is still at 11 carriers. With the USS Nimitz scheduled to retire at the end of next year, that number may soon be 10. The USS Harry S. Truman and USS Gerald R. Ford are currently sidelined for maintenance after deployments, the latter of which notched a post-Vietnam record 326 days at sea in May after it was extended to support operations in the Middle East. The Nimitz-class USS John C. Stennis is undergoing a years-long overhaul. The USS Ronald Reagan, also a Nimitz-class, is expected to be deployable by the end of August after a 17-month repair period. The Nimitz-class USS George H.W. Bush is in the Middle East. "We just don't have enough aircraft carriers right now in this rotation to sustain all the things we want to do, and I think this is a long-standing problem," said Stephen Wills, a Navy surface warfare officer who retired after 20 years. In 2014, the Navy began implementing the Optimized Fleet Response Plan, or OFRP, or OFRP, deployment model, which places maintenance, training, evaluations, and a single 8-month deployment within a 36-month cycle. The service says the framework is intended to produce a more comprehensively manned and trained force while providing predictability to deployment schedules for sailors and their families. In 2016, however, the U.S. Government Accountability Office found that heavy operational demands led the Navy to increase ship deployment lengths and reduce or defer ship maintenance. Those decisions made deployments less predictable, ate into training time, contributed to declining ship conditions, and increased the time ships required for much-needed maintenance. From the fiscal years 2014 through 2019, Navy ships spent more than 33,700 additional days in maintenance beyond intended scheduling, leading to fewer vessels available for training or operations. An upended supply network. While the Navy has long struggled with carrier availability, current U.S. leadership has created more operational tempo issues through poor planning and insufficient wartime support, according to lawmakers and a sailor who deployed in support of the Iran war. Logistics was a complete failure the entire time out there. Food, supplies, parts, said the sailor, who served aboard an Independence-class littoral combat ship and was granted anonymity due to fear of reprisal. Iranian attacks damaged the Navy's long-standing logistics hub in Bahrain in February, disrupting the regional supply network supporting ships operating in the Middle East. The Navy shifted the new logistics hub to Naval Support Facility Diego Garcia in an atoll in the Indian Ocean that sits more than 2,000 miles away from the service's carrier strike groups in the Middle East. Diego Garcia's distance proved to be problematic, the sailor said, with the hub requiring the LCS to place a food order 30 days in advance. Those orders were nearly impossible, however, with an influx schedule exacerbated by poor planning, the sailor added. Sailors were unhappy to resupply from the hub, instead grabbing whatever could be salvaged from replenishment at sea oilers. There's no excuse for why, if we're at war, we can't get an expedited food order, the sailor said. Representative Mike Levin, Democrat of California, told Military Times that the logistical issues described by the sailor were due to preparation failures. I've spoken to a lot of people who have been deployed, and you know the basic problem seems to be that if they were going to use Bahrain as a hub to restock, to get food and to provide rest and all of that, Levin said, if that was the idea, well, clearly that didn't work out. After February, March, the administration should have thought of that. People can break, too. At least two sailors attempted to jump overboard from the USS Abraham Lincoln, families of Lincoln sailors previously told Military Times. While the individual mental circumstances of the incidents remain unknown, the frantic operational tempo of combat operations inevitably takes a natural toll on service members, according to one sailor who has deployed to the Middle East aboard an aircraft carrier during the current conflict. Just like machines, people can break, too, said the service member who was granted anonymity for fear of reprisal from leadership. They need rest. Time to rest was not always available. Losing sleep was sometimes part of ensuring safety. If equipment broke, sailors would, at times, work well beyond normal shifts until it was fixed. In some instances, completion of the task could mean the difference between life and death. In a 2021 review, the GAO found that just 14% of Navy officers surveyed slept at least 7 hours per night during a recent deployment, while 67% reported 5 hours or less. GAO also found that the Navy routinely assigned fewer sailors to ships than workload studies indicated were needed to safely operate them. By 2023, surface fleet sailors were averaging 5.25 hours of sleep every 24 hours, below the Navy's standard of providing at least 7.5 hours of sleep opportunity. GAO identified crew shortfalls and mattress problems as challenges to managing fatigue. For its part, the Navy has implemented measures to try to address the issue, including initiating a study involving about 1,600 sailors wearing Oura rings to monitor sleep and other biometric indicators while underway. But lack of sleep, according to personnel, has been just one detriment experienced during the conflict with Iran. Service members have also faced food shortages on board the carrier, the sailor said, with quality that fluctuated between bad and horrible. It was either undercooked, overcooked, or unrecognizable at all, the sailor said. As extensions piled on, a decline in morale took on a recognizable tone at the phone center or in conversations at the galleys. Humor darkened even more than usual, and port visits meant less and less. These things have been happening on deployments for always, said Parker Moore, a nuclear reactor operator who served aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln before its recent deployment. It is bad, but it is always bad. During Moore's time on Lincoln, the stigma surrounding mental health remained prevalent. There were mental health professionals aboard the ship, but if a sailor sought help, the service member could be taken off their job. They're terrified to disappoint the people around them, Moore said. If I don't do my job, there's only 30 people who can do it, right? So now there's only 29 people. Following the report on mental health issues aboard the Lincoln, the Navy said it had not observed an increase in suicidal ideation or suicide attempts. The service did note, however, that additional counselors and resources were being sent to the crew. Admiral Brad Cooper, commander of U.S. Central Command, visited Lincoln on Saturday and issued a statement claiming that the ship had the lowest number of mental health cases among the Navy's 11 active aircraft carriers. Lack of transparency. The Pentagon, under the Trump administration, has become increasingly tight-lipped over the information it provides to Congress. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth released a memo in October 2025 informing Defense Department personnel, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, that authorization was required for any communication to leaders on Capitol Hill. Hegseth also dodged several questions from lawmakers during a July Senate hearing on the Iran war. When Senator John Ossoff, Democrat of Georgia, asked the Pentagon leader whether previous statements about Iran's military being, quote, destroyed and made combat ineffective were true, Hegseth declined to answer. Hegseth has also not held a Pentagon press briefing about the Iran war for more than 100 days, with the last coming on May 5th. To alleviate concerns over short-term problems with current military operations like those aboard the Lincoln, Congress must be able to carry out oversight, lawmakers said. Representative Betty McCollum, Democrat of Minnesota, told Military Times that the Pentagon should be sharing information that would allow political leaders to assess whether the President and Defense Secretary were deploying assets in the most mission-effective way. Invoking the War Powers Resolution would allow lawmakers to hold the current administration accountable, some Democrats have argued. The resolution requires the executive branch to notify Congress within 48 hours of deploying military forces and allows lawmakers to ensure the removal of military forces within 60 to 90 days unless Congress has declared war or authorized military force. Levin supports that approach, he said, and asked that his Republican colleagues stand up and ask tough questions. Republican members of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees did not respond to Military Times requests for comment. I think back to George W. Bush, Levin said. I disagreed wholeheartedly with Iraq, but you know about the steps that he took? You think about Secretary Rumsfeld, Vice President Cheney, others, their consistent engagement. For the LCS sailor, planning deficiencies are already rearing their head. Though the ship did assist with the Navy's blockade in the Strait of Hormuz, turning away more than a dozen vessels, it will now be sidelined longer than the scheduled because of deferred repairs. It is one example, the sailor said, of there being no long-term plan for ship rotations. We're going to keep you out here, the sailor said of the impression made on them, until your ship can't operate or function anymore. Now that concludes that top story. Up next, hundreds of U.S. military family members trapped at camp facing closure, group says. Sean Jamshidi was a U.S. Marine Corps gunnery sergeant who served in some of the service's most prized roles, including as an embassy security guard detachment commander and in psychological operations. But he feels helpless now to aid his brother, who worked for the U.S. government during the war in Afghanistan and has been stuck for nearly 2 years at a holding camp in Qatar, waiting for a visa to the United States. Jamshidi's brother is one of roughly 150 family members of U.S. troops and veterans stranded at Camp Asalia, according to the aid organization Afghan Evac. The camp is currently slated to close September 30th, And while organization leaders are not confident the U.S. government will follow through on that closure timeline, nothing has been formally communicated, they say, to camp residents who are waiting in limbo. Jamshidi was born in Afghanistan, but he came to the U.S. with his family around the age of 5. He opted to enlist in the Marine Corps, he said, because he had a deep appreciation for the freedoms America offered, having experienced life without those guarantees in Afghanistan. My mother, her dying wish is to see her son before she goes, so we're trying to keep her healthy until my brother gets there, Jamshidi said. I want to continue shining a light on this crisis so the American people can hear these stories and demand change. This is not a partisan issue. It's an American obligation. Afghan evac leaders say some 3,000 U.S. military family members, in all, are affected by a hard stop in visa distribution to Afghans that took effect late last year. They say many, like Jamshidi's brother, have received consulate chief of mission approval and completed the required interviews to come to the U.S. All they lack is the final paperwork. As the U.S. marks the 5th anniversary of the chaotic military withdrawal from Afghanistan that ended the war but left thousands of allies stranded, a coalition of refugee assistance and resettlement groups is calling on Congress to pass the Afghanistan TPS Act, which would create temporary protected status for Afghan refugees and allow visa processing to begin again. Representative Don Bacon, a Republican of Nebraska, a retired Air Force Brigadier General, and a co-sponsor of the bipartisan bill, said in a call with reporters this week that he supports a discharge petition, a measure that would force the bill out of committee and onto the House floor for a vote. Saying Bacon, who describes himself as an old Ronald Reagan-type Republican, quote, "Most Americans want a decent, I would call it Christian policy here, and that's not what we're getting. We have a moral obligation to those we serve with in Afghanistan who served by our side helping us out." Camp Asalia, which began to be used as an indefinite waypoint for Afghans who had been evacuated by the U.S. government in 2021, has received over 1,000 refugees. In addition to the limited freedoms and constrained conditions of life at the camp, residents are now contending with post-traumatic stress and other mental health crises from missiles flying overhead due to the Iranian conflict, Jamshidi said. "There's missile fragments falling on people's homes. There's loud noises and uncertainty," he said. One White House proposal has been to send the refugees in Qatar to the Democratic Republic of the Congo to figure out life for themselves from there. Jamshidi said he served at the U.S. Embassy in DRC's capital, Kinshasa, in 2018, and the thought troubles him. He said, quote, "I know the conditions there, and it's even worse than some areas in Afghanistan." Bacon and another member of Congress, Texas Democratic Representative Julie Johnson, said there wasn't a clear timeline for filing discharge petition on the Afghanistan TPS Act, but emphasized it would happen soon. They both stressed that the ultimate goal was to create a pathway for permanent resettlement in the U.S. for eligible Afghan allies. Jamshidi said he was part of a chat group with other troops and veterans with family at Camp Asalia. The chat, he said, was largely gone silent as members have gradually lost hope in a policy solution. Jamshidi said he's working to hang on to that hope. "As a Marine, I understand what it means to keep your promise and to stand by our coalition, our partners who served us and who supported us, who sacrificed their life for us, and how important that is," he said. "So I'm going to continue fighting for that." And that's a powerful message to end that article on. Up next. Thousands of soldiers now roam Washington's streets. They seldom stop crime. This article comes to us from Reuters. Well past midnight one day this spring, three police officers pulled up to a nightclub where a man was stomping on a young woman lying on the sidewalk. The officers stopped the attack and arrested him, according to a police report. It was the kind of assault police might encounter on almost any night in almost any city. But one detail stood out to police officer Xavier Jimenez, who wrote the report. There was approximately 15 National Guard members in the area on routine patrol who did not take any action. President Donald Trump deployed thousands of National Guard troops to Washington last summer as the centerpiece of what he describes as a no-holds-barred effort to combat crime, especially in cities run by Democrats. Every day, small clots of soldiers in camouflage and body armor patrolled tourist-heavy areas of the U.S. Capitol, including national monuments, subway stations, and the area around its professional baseball park. What the soldiers seldom do, Reuters found, is fight crime. Since their arrival last August, the National Guard soldiers Trump ordered to Washington have been mentioned in only a tiny fraction, about 1.3% of the criminal cases filed in the Superior Court of the District of Columbia, which handles nearly all the city's criminal prosecutions. In dozens of cases, the soldiers appear not as people making the arrests, but as victims of crime. The roughly 4,500 soldiers currently deployed to Washington outnumber its 3,200 police officers, and they cost more. The Trump administration last year told Congress that sending guardsmen to the Capitol cost about $1.6 million a day, before officials doubled the number of troops this summer. The city's most recent police budget was about $1.5 million daily. The administration told Congress it plans to keep sending soldiers to Washington, though it has not said how many, until the end of Trump's presidency in 2029 at a cost of $1.4 billion. Just to gauge the impact of that deployment, Reuters reviewed every publicly available charging document filed in Superior Court and interviewed lawyers, residents, service members, and others who are familiar with their work. The soldiers mostly responded to minor incidents in neighborhoods that are wealthier, whiter, and less dangerous than the rest of the Capitol. Reuters found after comparing court records to the city's demographics and crime information, Reuters could not find any reference in court records to soldiers doing any kind of law enforcement in the neighborhoods where about 82% of the city's 859 murders occurred over the past 5 years. The White House did not respond to questions about soldiers' work. Spokeswoman Lauren Beese said Trump's efforts in the city have, quote, driven down crime, beautified the city, and improved quality of life for countless individuals. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, who has called the deployment problematic, declined to comment, as did the city's police department. The National Guard Task Force managing the Washington deployment did not respond to questions about its work or its cost. A spokeswoman, Leona Hendrickson, said soldiers were too busy to be interviewed. Although soldiers have sometimes broken up fights or assaults, many of the crimes for which they detain people have been minor. In October, soldiers chased down a man who had taken 2 slices of pizza and offered $2 as partial payment, according to police records. A week later, they stopped a man who threw a rock at a bus. Tisk tisk. In April, they detained a man who allegedly stole 2 beef jerky sticks worth about $7 from a pharmacy, according to the report. Last month, 6 soldiers held a woman who drank a bottle of root beer without paying. Goodness. The Reverend William Young, who lives in the Navy Yard neighborhood, where soldiers patrol frequently, laughed when asked whether the troops made him feel safer. It's a way of keeping fear in all of us, he said. That is not how a capital of democracy should be protected, by having soldiers marching to protect the streets. They could have done more. Reuters found 217 criminal cases in Washington in which police mentioned the involvement of the National Guard. In about a quarter of them, 62 cases, soldiers single-handedly stopped people suspected of a crime, often for things like shoplifting or jumping turnstiles to avoid paying subway fare. In another 43 cases, soldiers helped police officers arrest someone. Videos obtained by community groups also show troops in groups of 20 or more stationed outside subway stations at night, blocking teens from descending the escalators to enforce a city curfew. It's like they brought people here from all across the country just to be here, and they harass people a lot more than they're actually doing police work, said the Reverend Norman Nixon, the pastor of the Union Temple Baptist Church. Although the guardsmen have been deputized as U.S. Marshals, according to government records, they have limited law enforcement power. The Defense Department has described their work as, quote, presence patrols, a show of force meant to deter crime rather than respond to it. They can detain suspects, but then must call police officers to make a formal arrest. Court records describe 35 instances in which the troops were witnesses to crimes, sometimes simply watching until police officers arrived. They've told officers about a drug deal, a man urinating in public, another who exposed himself to a subway policeman, and 2 men writing with chalk on a monument outside the city's train station, one of them wearing a banana costume. Evelyn Jones said she wonders whether soldiers could have saved her nephew, Keon Jones, who was stabbed to death in April near a trendy strip of hotels and restaurants on the city's waterfront. The soldiers called emergency services after finding Jones unresponsive after a fight. They later told police they thought Jones was merely intoxicated. They did not realize until after officers reached the scene that he had been stabbed so severely his intestines were spilling out. He died in hospital about 2 hours later. They could have done more to help him, his aunt said. The service members themselves have often been victims, a fact underscored last year when two soldiers from West Virginia were shot not far from the White House, killing one of them. Reuters found 62 cases in which people were charged with pushing, punching, or threatening soldiers. 9 were accused of spitting on the soldiers. 1 man allegedly tried to grab a soldier's pistol as a soldier tried to arrest him for stealing baseball caps in a subway station. Another man was charged after he told a group of soldiers that he wanted to shoot you in between your balls with a bazooka, according to a police report. And twice, police in Washington arrested off-duty soldiers for violating the city's firearm laws, though the U.S. Attorney's Office dropped the charges against both of them. Patrolling safer neighborhoods. Trump also authorized smaller deployments in Memphis and New Orleans and has mused about sending soldiers to other cities. You do not want armed soldiers on the streets of America, said General Randy Manner, who retired in 2012 as the second in command of the National Guard Bureau. He said soldiers are ill-prepared for police work and more expensive than hiring more police officers. The Reuters review of court records found little evidence of soldiers' presence in high-crime neighborhoods where they might have responded to more serious crimes. Instead, the court records show soldiers were more likely to be mentioned in arrest records in city neighborhoods that have higher incomes, in which more people have college degrees, and where more people are white. Most of the arrests in which soldiers participated were either near the city's core or its subway stops. Salim Adofo, an outreach coordinator with the Anacostia Coordinating Council, a nonprofit operating in a low-income part of the city, said that matched his experience. I haven't seen them all year, he said. And with that, we're out of time, so I want to say thank you once again for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona and this program for Military Times. This is your host, signing out.